Okay, folks, a very good day to you. I say good day because I don't know what time of day you're going to be listening to this latest podcast from Life on Planet Porky with myself and, of course, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Ms. Jones, how are you coping in this sub-zero atmosphere, temperature, weather, call it what you will, at the moment? I love it. I love this sort of weather. How are you coping?
Yeah, quite enjoying it, actually. I managed to, I think I saved somebody's life this morning.
Really?
Lady came off her bike on the crossroads in Dulwich Village. So I managed to save her. Mm. People were keeling over left, right and centre.
Really? On the road?
Yeah, yeah, well, on the ice. Little kids falling off their bikes and all kinds. So it's been a bit dramatic today so far, but very happy to be here.
Yeah, what happened to the woman on the bike?
She literally slid on the ice and she went over the handlebars.
Oh, God.
And landed smack on the road on her face. She wasn't very happy about it. But I said, well, just wheel the bike maybe for a little while because you might be in shock. You shouldn't really get back on.
Yeah.
It's that old thing of, do I get back on the horse? I don't think you should get back on your bike.
No, I totally agree. Did she have a bruised and battered face?
No, she seemed all right. Her nose was running quite badly. I the sight of blood, I sort of did a quick, we'll see you then.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get involved in the blood, you know.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That's nice, isn't it? You know, help your human, you know, help your fellow human. Oh, sorry, dear. You've got a bit of blood coming on your nose. I'm off, you know. Oh, yeah.
Well, I did help her, you see. I was the one who ran and picked her up.
Oh, really? Yeah. The Milk of Human Kindness by Leslie Ann Jones. Yeah. Well, I tell you something. The thing about slipping is it's a very, very serious issue. My mum fell over and broke her hip when she was 80 and sadly died when she was 85. God rest her soul. But her life was never the same again after she broke her hip, honestly, because it affects old people's mobility. And you've got to be terribly, terribly careful. The slightest thing, honestly, you could bump into the table at that age and break your hip. You know what I mean? Mm. It's shocking, and I'm very, very careful on my feet. I've been out at 6 a.m. the last couple of days. I like to get out and get the journals and the papers in early. And you're absolutely right. The roads have been treacherous. When I come down the end of my road, it goes downhill and it's on a curve into the next road. It's absolutely treacherous. And I have to hold on to the wall to make sure my feet don't go from under me. But I do love to wake up and see the land covered in snow. It's beautiful, you know?
It does look great. I drove over your way on Friday night, actually. I probably was about 5 minutes from your house.
Oh.
Should have come round, shouldn't I, really?
Well, I couldn't let you in, you see, because of COVID.
No, but we could have had a quick chat on the doorstep. I haven't seen your face for about a year.
Well, you know, your luck won't last, don't worry. Yeah.
But, driving over there on Friday evening, I had to deliver. It was a little, I discovered that it was my editor's birthday the next day. Mm. And he's been very kind and generous to me. And I suddenly found out, guess how old? He was 30 next day.
Yeah.
That's your editor for you. It's like policemen. You know when you're getting old because the policemen all look like your children, isn't it?
Sure.
So I just wanted to run over and deliver him a quick birthday gift. And,
that's very nice of you, very kind of you. And did you come around the M25?
No. Straight down through Streatham and down the back streets. Oh, yes, it was very, very quick.
Yeah, well, there's no traffic about at the moment, isn't there? Okay, that's good. Now, what was I going to talk to you about? Loads of things. Have you seen this report that says that the police take much more notice of women as witnesses than they do of men? Because women are actually better. They make better witnesses. Women are more helpful than men at catching crooks because they pay more attention. According to Scotland Yard's top EFIT officer, Tony Barnes has interviewed more than 2,000 witnesses over 11 years to make computer-aided images of suspects' faces and said that women tended to have a better visual recollection of criminals. How about that?
Mm, I would say there's something in that. Obviously, there is. They wouldn't have written it otherwise. But I think, I hate to generalise, but overall, maybe men are better at seeing the bigger picture, whereas women have a better eye for detail.
Well, what's very interesting here is it says that women, like ever since the caveman times and all that, still have an inherent fear of being attacked and being attacked by a man. So they are much more spatially aware of the area around them and much more alert to the possibility of danger at all times.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think I'm always looking for, you know, the bad thing to happen. Even if I'm out walking in the street in the middle of the day, I've got my wits about me, as they used to say, and I'm looking around and over my shoulder. If somebody comes running up behind me, I always turn around to see who it is, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I do notice things like the brand of a car or a number plate or, you know, what somebody's wearing or things like that. Yeah. I always do notice the details.
Well, you and I, and this is not a joke, but it's a joke I've used all my life, we're trained observers because we are journalists, and we are, you know, our instincts are to pick up things that are going to turn into a line in our story, or we can describe something that's unusual or something like that, you know. But this is interesting. The report says when men walk along the high street, there's this machismo thing where they stride because they think nothing can harm them. Women are more likely to be thinking about protecting themselves and possibly their children and pay more attention to what's going on around them. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think it's true,
Yeah, I think it probably is true. And I tell you who expressed that view a couple of years ago in a column, Caitlin Moran. You know, she writes a column in the Times on a Saturday.
Do you mean Caitlin Moran?
Caitlin Moran, or Caitlin Moran, as I call
Caitlin
her,
Moron.
Caitlin Moran. She's the woman, by the way, who...
I know actually, she's a woman, yeah.
Yes, no. No, she made a fortune. I'd written a book called How to Be a Woman, so good luck to her. She comes from a council estate in Wolverhampton in the Black Country. Never stops reminding people, you know. Multi-millionaire, but she votes for Labour. And she's the woman who, a couple of years ago, in the election that brought Theresa May to... the election that nearly finished off Theresa May... She actually said in an interview, anybody who doesn't vote for Jeremy Thorpe tomorrow is a, and then used the C word. But
Jeremy Thorpe?
Not Jeremy Thorpe, but who was the leader of the Labour Party? Jeremy Corbyn.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Jeremy Thorpe died about 40.
What century are we in today?
Exactly. Yeah, Jeremy Thorpe died about 40
years ago. Have we gone back in time? Have we had the time machine out this weekend?
We have got a time machine out. I was obviously thinking of Hugh Grant in that A Terribly English Affair. You know, that was Jeremy Thorpe, wasn't it?
Or maybe that was an English scandal.
Oh, an English scandal, that's right. Yeah, that's it. Well done. Okay, you've got on the ball this morning.
So
unlike I've lost the point of my story now. Miss Caitlin Moran. Yeah, unlike me, thank you. Caitlin Moran, Caitlin Moran, actually said anybody who doesn't vote for Jeremy, what's his name again, Corbyn, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm having a good Monday, and use the C word, which I think is unacceptable, don't you?
Definitely, especially in print. Yeah.
Well, yes.
There's a time and a place for everything. But I'm never quite sure about the badger hairdo that she has.
Yeah, or the pose of the pictures. You know, she's always got a grimace on her face or something. But look, we mustn't have her go. She's very successful.
She is very successful. She's a good journalist.
Yes.
I just sometimes think she doesn't do herself any favours in terms of her image. But maybe that's deliberate.
Maybe that's part of her image, if you see what I mean.
It's an anti-image, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of anti-image, yeah. So talking about great journalists then, who've, we've come across or have been part of our lives. What about old Larry King? He's died now. And he was a character, if nothing else. He certainly was, wasn't he?
God rest his soul. He looked a bit like a corpse towards the end, didn't he?
Yeah, he looked awful.
Perhaps he was practising.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah, practicing to be a corpse. Yeah. Not something I, you know, really turn my attention to. But he interviewed just about everybody in the world who was famous, and 25 years, Larry King Live, when I lived in the States, that was the, you know, the top rated show and all that kind of stuff. He was married about 6 times. And apparently what he was very good at was he did hardly any preparation for any of his guests, and didn't even want to know who he was interviewing sometimes. He'd arrive at the studio, he'd sit in his own dressing room, read, you know, something that wasn't related to the show, and then somebody would come in and tell him who he was interviewing. And on one occasion, is it Tom Petty, who was the great musician who worked with the Travelling Wilburys?
Yes.
Yeah. They said, oh, Tom Petty. And he said, who's Tom Petty? And they said, oh, we'll get you some biography. He said, no, I don't want to know. Apparently, his routine was to draw all the information about themselves out of his guest, and they sort of, you know, gave a life portrayal of what they were all about without Larry King even knowing who they were.
I think that's rather sloppy. It's not our approach by any means.
No, it's not. No.
I mean, how can you, you know, you're wasting your viewers' time, I feel, if you haven't prepared, if you don't know the you know, the basics, the ins and outs, who is this person in the first place? If you're asking who's Tom Petty, surely Tom Petty's going to be fed up with you by the time he gets 2 seconds into the interview.
Well, maybe, but I think he became so famous, it was, you know, like a badge of honour to be on his show, if you see what I mean. So I think people maybe just put up with that, I don't know. First got married when he was 19. Towards the end of his life, you said he looked like a corpse, and I shouldn't be laughing because, you know, respect for the dead and all
one.
That.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Now he is one.
Yeah, he is one. You're absolutely right, yeah. He was sustained by 4 human growth hormone pills a day. What's a human growth hormone pill?
I don't know. I'm not sure I want to know.
No, I'm not sure I want to know either. But when Piers first broke into America, he became his replacement, Larry King's replacement on CNN. I remember there was a huge banner in Times Square. It was literally about 100 feet long. You know, it's massive, announcing Piers's arrival on the American TV scene. He took over from Larry King. To start off with, Larry King was very supportive, you know, good luck, Piers, and all that. But then, as always, it changed and Larry King started getting bitter and all that kind of stuff. But Piers, I'm afraid, talked himself out of that job, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And I'm not quite sure how he did that. I think it had something to do with gun laws. Aren't Americans very protective of their right to bear arms and so on?
Absolutely.
How dare a British journalist come in here and tell us what to do with our guns?
That's absolutely true. It's exactly what happened. There was a series of massacres, right, in America, you know, the schools and all that kind of stuff, you know. And Piers started banging the drum and demanding, you know, a radical reform of the gun laws, restrict the purchase of guns and all that. And in America, as you well know, there's a very powerful body called the National Rifle Association, NRA. And that's supported by a load of Hollywood actors, you know, like who's the guy who played Ben-Hur? Who was that? You know, the guy in... You know what I mean? Anyway, he's probably
Charlton
dead by
Heston.
Now. Charlton Heston. That's right. I think he was the you know, like the chairman of it, or something like that. And they just decided this was all wrong because America's part of the Constitution, right to bear guns, is all about frontier men. You know what I mean? Who went out and developed their homes and their lands in sort of territory which was occupied by the Sioux tribe or something like that, and you had to have a gun to survive.
Yeah, but it's not like that anymore. And I think that they bang on about amendments and all the rest of it. I think a lot of people in America misinterpret those amendments to their constitution. And I don't think that it's appropriate anymore that everybody has the right to bear arms.
Well, in some counties in Texas, the state of Texas, it's actually against the law not to have a gun in your house or your car because of the principle. Yeah, I know, because of the principle of you must stand up and defend yourself and not give that responsibility to the government or the police. I know, it's amazing.
You have to have a gun in your car.
Yeah, in some counties in Texas, you have to have a gun in your car in case your car's hijacked or something like that, you know. But
So it would be all right to shoot somebody dead if they hijacked your car?
In defence, if you could prove that you were defending your property or your life, that is a defence in certain, you know, a lot of it is state law rather than federal law. And in some parts of America, in the Deep South, yes, that's right.
Wonder why their country is in such disarray.
Well, we'll have to see what's happened, won't we, after the election of the new president. Talking about that, Melania made a pretty dramatic exit, didn't she, from First Ladyship, if you see what I mean. Gets on the plane in a beautiful sort of black outfit with the black high heels and flew off in Air Force One for the last time. But a very different Melania got off at the other end, didn't she?
She was wearing a rather wonderful Gucci kaftan, wasn't she?
I thought it was horrible.
Well, she obviously liked it and she was ready for the beach. She was not First Lady anymore. She didn't see why she should have to pose for photographs. So she was out of there. She got off and she was heading for that sand. Why not?
Yeah, well, Mar-a-Lago, where they have their, like, Florida spread. But I don't know what will unravel now in the... Well, he'll be called President Clinton, won't he, for the rest of his life. I don't know what will unravel in his life now.
Well, maybe even Trump. What do you think?
Oh, what did I say?
Clinton.
I'm going mad this morning. I think I've had too much coffee. Yeah, I must be on a high. yes, President Trump. I'll get that right. Maybe as we go on, I'll get a few things right in this podcast, OK? Listen, I was going to say he could be in debt to the tune of $1 billion. Apparently, you know, now he turns his hand back to business and all that. But anyway, that's all going to unfold over the next 4 years. I say, old Boris eventually got the first call from the new president, Sleepy Joe Biden.
Mm. Yeah, he did. I mean, people are going, oh, I wonder what they spoke about. Well, there's a few issues. Climate change, COVID, global security. Because we're hosting the G7, aren't we? And the UN Climate Change Conference this year. So
yes.
You know, there are quite a few things on their list. I'm sure it was a diplomatic call.
They spoke about trains as well. They're both like trains, apparently. I mean, you know, take it down to a very basic level. But anyway, there we go.
There's a special relationship, so they've got to, start somewhere, haven't they?
Yeah. The G7 summit, because there's two summits that he's going to come here for. The G7, which is in a month, I think, or a couple of months. And then there's a climate one in Scotland later in the year. But the G7 one's being held in Carris Bay in Cornwall, where the roads into Carris Bay are so narrow that the president's car won't be able to drive down them. What a ridiculous place.
No. They won't go by car. They'll drop him in by helicopter.
Yeah, they will, but to get around Carris Bay, the beast, as the car is known, you know, the limo that the president drives around in, has to be there because he can't walk anywhere. He has to go from one building to another in the car because the car, for instance, has got 5-inch metal protective plates all around it in case anybody wants to kill him.
Yeah, well, they get a Mini Cooper instead, would they?
Well, they'll have to get it made quick with 5-inch plating or something like that, driving around Carris Bay. I think it's mad. When I asked somebody why, they said, well, it's for security. It's easier to secure a place like Carris Bay than it is central London. I don't think it is.
Well, I think it probably is.
I mean, in Carris Bay, you could creep up on out of a sand dune with a gun or something. You know, anyway, look, what do I know about it?
They'll have a few frigates in the bay there. They'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I should think you're probably right.
Turning into a woman because you're seeing the danger and everything.
Danger and everything, absolutely right. Yeah, no, I'm very observant. I always have been. Trained observer, as we've said. Now, of course, it wouldn't be Life on Planet Porky unless we told you a story about John Lennon, would it? And what a terrific story it is, because it involves an old colleague of mine, Judith Simons. Hmm?
Yeah.
Isn't it fantastic?
Well, yeah, except that you're going to tell us that he wrote her a letter. John Lennon, when he was living in New York, was in the habit of writing postcards and letters to many journalists back home in London.
Yes.
And I know quite a few people who've kept them and who've got those. Some of them have sold them at auction and so on.
Yeah.
But this wasn't an unusual thing for John Lennon to do. So Judith just happened to be one of the lucky ones.
Well, actually, you're absolutely right there. But it was the revelation to start off with that he might have come back. He phoned his auntie Mimi the night before he was actually killed, which I didn't realise. Phoned his auntie Mimi the night before, said, I'm so happy. I'm making plans to come back. I might even do a concert over there. And the letter I'm talking about here was a letter that Auntie Mimi wrote to Judith. I mean, Judith wrote to Auntie Mimi, you know, to express her terrible shock and condolences. And Auntie Mimi knew Judith so well, she wrote back to her and said it's so shocking, particularly as he said he was going to come home. And that's amazing. I think you said that to me. I think you've told me before you thought he would eventually come back to Britain.
Well, I spoke about it in my recent book.
Of course, yeah.
John obviously had recently recorded Double Fantasy with Yoko.
Yeah.
The plan was to do a tour in 1981. He was going to sail into Liverpool on the QE2 from New York.
Of course, yeah.
And give the great comeback concert in Liverpool in 81, then advance across Europe and thence around the globe. That was going to be his big comeback world tour.
Fantastic. Judith Simons, I knew her. I worked with her. She was, I think we spoke to her about her before. She was only about 4'2", very dark hair, little Jewish lady, I think. But she got in right at the start of Beatlemania, didn't she? And knew them all.
Yeah, she did. She was on the ground floor.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, some people to this day still claim that Hey Jude was written about Judith Simons.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was written about Julian Lennon, John's son.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But anyway, there we go. Story a day, isn't it, I'm afraid, about John Lennon or the Beatles or anything else. And
never going away.
Never going away. And just on that, as I am speaking to you now, Miss Jones, right, here in my studio/office, I'm looking directly in front of me at a copy of Egypt Station, which sadly I haven't had time to play yet since you very kindly sent it to me for my birthday at the end of December. So I haven't really publicly thanked you yet. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm looking forward to hearing what you think of it.
I think in the next couple of days that'll be played, but just been a bit busy. And by the way, talking about rock stars, I interviewed Rick Wakeman over the weekend.
And he's a very dear friend of mine. I wish I'd known you were doing that.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, I didn't really know until the last minute, you know, when we got it together. But Rick got had an LP out last year, but it was all, you know, distribution damaged by the COVID close down, all that kind of stuff, you know. But he was, you know, expressing his views on the modern day way of records being sold and downloaded and all that. And also, he's got this kind of YouTube type thing he does now. I forgot what it's called, but we were talking about it, you know. But what a thoroughly nice chap.
Oh, he's gorgeous. Yeah, I've known Rick a long, long time, and
really,
yes, I've worked with him a lot. He came and did a wonderful lecture at St. Bride's Church, actually, talking. We have a thing called the Olsen Lecture every year. And he came and gave a lecture about the music business. And he played some piano for the audience as well. And he's so accommodating, so down to earth.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Rick. He's a laugh a minute. You go and see him live.
Yes.
And he does a sort of combination between a stand-up show and obviously a piano concert.
Yeah.
He's just so naturally funny. He really is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as I say, he came over where I'd never met him before, but he was, you know, it was like talking to an old friend, to be honest. And, you know, some of the interviews you do, you know, they sort of drag a bit and you think, I'm not sure I got anything out of that. But with Rick, you could have had him there all day and it would have still been worthwhile, you know. But anyway, there we are. Have we talked about this phenomenon that's going on during lockdown, where the women are having loads and loads of plastic surgery because it's so long since they've seen their friends, it'll be so long until they see them, they're going to deny they've had any plastic surgery, but they will look 5 years younger.
Do you actually know somebody who's done this? Because no. I don't.
No.
Now, who's doing it for them?
Demand for clandestine breast reductions and tummy tucks is soaring as Britons take advantage of working from home and lockdowns to complete secret plastic surgery. I don't know. But they're going, you know, they're finding some people somewhere to do it, I think.
Well, it seems a bit immoral during a pandemic that surgeons are still mopping up nicely doing this kind of work when perhaps they could be on the front line contributing to the cause.
Well, you could be right, but listen to this. Dan Marsh, a council member of the British Association of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, said there had been a massive increase in demand and he's booked out for the next 9 months. He said, "We thought the pandemic would knock everything, but we've all been super busy. The only mitigating factor has been the facilities, because a lot of places have been taken over by the NHS. The main reason for the demand is that people can recuperate at home. They don't have to take sick leave and no one, including their friends, has to know." Good God, isn't that amazing that you're worried about it?
I think it's a bit disgusting, really, when millions of people are dying around the planet and people are worried about a flabby tummy or a bit of a loose breast.
A bit of a loose breast. Now, come on, it's a family show, Miss Jones. I'm not going into loose breasts, if you don't mind. By the way, you'll have seen a two-page spread in a paper you read this morning about do people take Botox or not, but they all look exactly the same now as they did 10 years ago.
Yeah, I saw that. And I think they don't, actually. Their photographs look the same as their photographs looked 10 years ago.
Right.
But if you see these people in the flesh, they never look quite as good as their pictures, do they?
No, never, never. They airbrush the pictures. I had a terrible shock when the first time I met Michael Gove's wife. Is that Sarah Oliver or somebody? What's her name?
Sarah Vine.
Sarah Vine, that's the one. Well done, yes. Got it right first time.
She's a nice lady, but she doesn't look anything like her byline picture. For a start, that photograph has long hair.
Yes.
And she hasn't had long hair for about 15 years.
Right. And she's now got short hair, has she?
Well, she wrote a piece about it, so I'm not giving away any trade secrets here, but she started to have female baldness.
Right.
So she had a weave done,
oh,
which I know a bit about because a friend of mine has had that done.
Oh, yeah.
And they weave in all this sort of fake hair and they weld it to your real hair and stuff.
Yeah.
So she's got a very short hairstyle now because she's got this weave. Yeah. So she hasn't looked like that Sarah Vine in the paper for at least 15 years, maybe more.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, I have every sympathy for anybody who loses their hair, particularly a lady. It's a shocking thing for them sometimes. And anyway, I think we have to accept it's an image, isn't it, which is designed to just placate the reader or the listener as to who they're reading or listening to.
Yeah, that's true. But then Sarah Vine goes on a television chat show to talk about whatever issue she's written about this week.
Yeah.
And everyone's going, oh, that's not her. She doesn't look anything like that. Look at her picture in the paper.
Yeah. When I first saw her, I didn't recognise her. You're absolutely right.
And she's very nice, by the way. I will say that.
I have met
her a few times and she's lovely.
Very nice lady. Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. I will be walking on the North Downs later on today, Miss Jones. We've already spoken about the weather in this podcast, but the sunshine is out now as I'm talking to you. The sunlight is glistening off the snowy pathways, and I can't wait to get out there and expel a bit of cold air into the atmosphere. I really do like this time of year. In a way, you know, I think there's something of the polar bear in me. I wonder whether I'm the wrong species, because I'd love to slop around in the Arctic all the time, rolling around in snow and ice and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Well, maybe you should be living in the Alps. You'd rather like that, I think.
Well, that's why I like going to Iceland. I love going to Iceland, and I love the temperature there, and all kinds of walking across frozen lakes and all that kind of stuff. That is for me. Now, we talk about many things in this podcast, Miss Jones. I want to tell you this remarkable story. You won't believe me if I say to you that within the last 10 days, a lady called Helen Jackson has died in America, and she was the last widow of an American Civil War soldier. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I read the story. And
isn't it amazing?
Well, sort of. It's not quite as everybody would imagine a marriage to have been. So when she was a child,
17.
She was one of... she was a child and one of 10 kids, she started to look after this old guy. He was in his 90s, who lived nearby, a neighbor of the family. And he was paying for her to come and do little jobs for him in the house.
Yes.
And he was in his 90s. She, at the age of 17, was still at school when they married. And her parents never knew about it. And the reason he gave was that he wanted her to have his widow's pension, his war pension, when he died. Mm. But she was so ashamed of what she'd done and of what he'd done, and they wanted to avoid gossip and everything else at that time, that she never told anybody and she never claimed the pension anyway. So what was the point?
I totally agree. It's the weirdest story. And it blighted her life, because then she could never go off and marry anybody else. Because if she tried to, they'd find out she was already married. So she lived as a recluse for the rest of her life. But isn't it utterly amazing the way that links through generations of families can take you so far back? You know, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, look, there was no intimacy in that marriage.
Oh, no,
she never even lived with him.
No.
So you couldn't really call that a marriage, could you?
No, you couldn't really, except there was a bit of paper saying that she was married. Do you know anything about your great-grandparents, for instance?
Yes, they were still alive when I was a child.
Really?
So I knew them pretty well.
Golly, that's amazing. And do you know what they did? And do they come from Wales, I suppose?
Yeah, well, my great-grandmother, who was my father's grandmother, she came over in a coracle from Ireland to Wales.
Yeah.
And she was in service, as so many young women were in those days.
Indeed.
And my great-grandfather, Walter, worked on the railways.
Oh, it's amazing. Do you know, I didn't even meet three of my grandparents. They died before when I was little. You know, it was all after the Second World War and all that.
Your actual grandparents?
Of my four grandparents, three of them were alcoholics, right, who died of drink. And the fourth one, who I only knew as, what was his name? I only knew him as Alf the Docker. But, I only ever met him once, I think. And then he turned up at my father's funeral. That's the second time I ever met him. But I never actually met my grandparents because they weren't alive.
That's a shame. Well, I suppose that would account for it, yes. But no, I had all four of my grandparents when I was a child.
Golly,
so I guess I was very lucky.
Yeah, I don't understand the relationship between a person and their grandparents, honestly. It's because I've never had that relationship. You know, I don't. It doesn't sort of register with me. But anyway, that's another story.
My kids had all theirs, all four of theirs as well.
Who did?
All my children did.
Really?
Until relatively.
Oh, yeah, of course, until your dad, yes. Yes, that's very sad, yeah. Talking about your dad, by the way, there's another story here about a footballer, which he probably covered this story. I don't know if it means anything to you, but do you remember the great football bribery story, throwing football matches, which appeared in the Sunday People in the 60s?
Well, I don't remember it at the time that it happened, but I remember Dad talking about it.
Exactly.
It was a big betting scandal, wasn't it?
It was,
basically betting on themselves to lose, I think.
Well, it's never really been fully explained. One of the players involved was a guy called Tony Kay. And Tony Kay was at Sheffield Wednesday when it happened, but he got transferred to Everton because the Everton manager, Harry Catterick, moved from Sheffield Wednesday to Everton. And Everton won the championship in 63 with Tony Kay. Tony Kay was then prosecuted for being amongst this betting ring. But Tony Kay said he didn't know what it was all about. Somebody asked him for money in the dressing room and he gave them £2 or something like that. And it's never really been explained what it was all about. They were all banned for life, by the way, and never played football again. Tony Kay would have been in the 1966 England World Cup winning side because he was an England international, but he was banned from the game. And it was a tragedy. But Peter Swan has died, and I just read his obituary. And his explanation for it was, he said, we're on such poor money in those days that if we didn't win, we didn't get our win bonus. So we collected money from the lads in the dressing room and they gave it to a bookkeeper in case they lost to cover their win bonus. So it seems, doesn't it, very innocent. And in fact, in that game, the game that they cited, Peter Swan was made man of the match. So it wasn't like he wasn't trying. They were just trying to cover their win bonuses. But a terrible, tragic story of wasted careers.
Well, Peter Swan actually went to prison for it for about 4 months.
Yes, he did. Tony Kay did.
Yeah, he did get a life ban, but he did make a comeback in the 70s.
I think it was the age of 36, though.
Yeah, a bit late for him, but he did make a comeback. So the ban didn't last for life in his case.
Yeah, but it lasted for the greater part of his professional career. That's what I mean. It ruined his life.
That's true, but he did win 19 caps for England.
Yes.
He too could have played in Ramsey's World Cup.
Oh, definitely. He'd have been the centre-half instead of Jack Charlton. Absolutely, yeah.
And instead of that, he became a car salesman and ran a pub for a while.
Yeah, that's right. Tony Kay used to go to Everton as a spectator and stand on a rail at the back of Gladys Street and shout insults to the Everton players. He went off his rocker.
Oh, dear. Well, Peter Swan had Alzheimer's as well. So
yes, he did at the end of his life, which is rather sad, wasn't it?
Very sad story.
Yeah. Now, talking about footballers, I'll tell you an heroic story about myself and a footballer, OK? It happens to be the birthday of Frank Leboeuf, right? Do you remember Frank Leboeuf?
Oh, I do. That rather yummy French player, wasn't
yummy.
He?
Well, he's Leboeuf is translated in French as the beef, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Frank the Beef, okay.
No, he was an actor. I think he's been an actor.
That was Cantona.
No, Frank Leboeuf has been an actor.
Right.
And he was in the winning side of the World Cup in 98.
I lost you there for a second, Miss Jones. I'm awfully sorry. It was a blip. He played in the World Cup in 98. You're absolutely right, when France won it, yes?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely right. And he's a very nice guy. Anyway, let me tell you that we were in Germany for the World Cup in 2006, OK? And you're in a different city every day because you're going to different matches, you know, in different venues and all that kind of stuff. And I can't remember which city we were in, but I think it might have been Nuremberg, OK? Because I remember they going to the Nuremberg rally site, which is still there, by the way. Germans never knocked that down. It's still there, you know, the rallying place for the Nuremberg rallies.
Well, that's worrying. They might need it again.
Well, we hope not, don't we? And it's very historical, obviously. But anyway, we went to this rather decent restaurant and we were just eating when there was a disturbance at a table on the other side of the restaurant, OK? And I had to listen for a minute and then I thought, they're English voices. And it was three rather well-to-do English fans, sort of, you know, young businessmen who were getting loud and aggressive and they were drunk and they were shouting their mouth off and giving it, you know, England rules and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And eventually the manager went over to them and asked them either to be quiet or to leave. They got more abusive. He asked them to leave and then they wouldn't leave and they started throwing things around. So I felt as an Englishman in Germany, right, I thought, I've got to do something about this. So I went over to, I was the most senior person there from the people I was with. It was Talk Sport I was working with, right? And I went over and I said, right, lads, let's cut this out, shall we? Either shut up and get on with things or leave, because you are a disgrace to your country and I'm an Englishman and I don't appreciate what you're doing and the image you're giving to the United Kingdom, to England in particular. And they all got up and came towards me. You know, they're going to sort of do me in. And another bloke got up from another table, came over and put himself alongside me, and it was Frank LaBerth.
Wow. And what happened next?
Sorry, you seemed stunned there into silence, Miss Jones.
No, I thought that you were building up to some big punchline.
No,
and
am.
Then you...
I
am, you were kind of waiting for me to go, wow, what happened next?
Well, I did want you to go, wow, Frank LaBerth stepped up alongside you. You know what I mean? One of the most famous players in the history of the Premier League. Well, he stood alongside me. And he said, you know, you boys are stupid. You know, you are a disgrace. You know, England is a wonderful country, but you are scum and all this kind of stuff.
And they said, hop off, you frog.
Oh, that's very nice, isn't it, Miss Jones? Thank you. So I'm trying to tell you a story of my heroism, right, how I sort things out, protect my country's reputation on foreign lands in Germany, and you're just basically taking the piss, aren't you? Hey?
Hey? What do you expect? Look, you're not really kind of getting to the point, so let's have the point of the story,
shall we? The point is that me and Frank Berth got together and rescued a very difficult and potentially dangerous situation in a restaurant in Germany, defending the honour of my country. If that's not enough to impress you, Miss Jones, I don't know what is. What did you expect me to do? Wade in there, roll up my sleeves and knock three of them out at one time?
Well, I thought that was what was coming, you see. That I could see fists flying and, you know, steam coming out of your rears and the whole bit.
Yeah.
And you guys kind of slapping each other high five at the end of all this.
Yeah.
And instead we get silence and I go, oh, wow, no, that's amazing.
There was a bit of wrestling going on because they made a move towards us and Frank stepped forward and grabbed one of them, grabbed his arm, got it up his back and started taking him out, and the other two gave up and followed. So it was a very heroic. But I'm going to move on because you're clearly not impressed. And
did you keep in touch?
Sorry?
Did you guys keep in touch?
No, of course not. I mean, you know, he didn't say, oh, it is Meg Paris from Talk Sport, you know?
Can I have your number?
Yeah, get your number. No, of course, half the restaurant then got up and wanted to take pictures of Frank Berth and his autograph and all that, because up to that moment he'd been quite quiet. But I tell you what, it's the birthday of another footballer who I might have spoke to you about before, David Ginola, right?
Oh, yeah, we like him, yeah. He's a bit French. Yeah,
yeah, he's French. I've told you before, haven't I, how I've actually seen women... I've seen women's knees go weak in the presence of David Ginola. I've told you that, haven't I?
What does it look like when somebody's knees go weak?
Well, they go all swoony, you know, and their face loses shape and all that kind of stuff, and their eyes start rolling in their head. Have you never seen that sort of?
No, that's pathetic.
Why?
Well, it is.
Well, have you ever met Zavid Ginola?
No, I haven't, but I've seen him on telly.
Yeah, well, he's apparently one of the most handsome men in the world. That's the problem, okay?
Yeah, he is. He absolutely is.
Mm. Yeah, well, if you're in his presence, you might swoon as well.
No, I'm too old for all that.
Well, yes, okay, maybe you are, but maybe when you were a younger lady, you know, if you were in your mid-20s and David, you know, the hunk that he is, you know, because I'm worth it, turned up, you might swoon as well.
Hmm? Because I'm worth it.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's what he said.
Very good. Yeah, you could get a gig doing that, as you could.
That's what he said in the advert, wasn't it? L'Oreal. Because I'm worth it. Kate Moss did as well, but she didn't say it with much conviction. David did. But I've told you.
She doesn't say anything with much conviction, does she?
Well, no, maybe not. I don't know, Miss Jones. Honestly, sometimes I just wonder where your values in life lie, honestly. You know, there I am trying to, you know, tell you about the way I do things. Now, I tell you what I was going to talk to you about. Are you a lady who nibbles nuts every day? That sounds very rude, doesn't it?
Oh, come on, family show, please.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Eating a few handfuls of nuts a week from middle age onwards could help ward off dementia as you get older, research suggests. So are you a nutty nibbler?
I've always loved nuts, but I steer clear of anything pre-prepared, anything in a packet, salt, You know, you don't want to go eating peanuts. I know that you love them, but you mustn't do that.
Well,
you want nuts in their raw state, plain, unprocessed, unsalted, macadamias, Brazils, pistachios, walnuts, that kind of thing.
But they don't taste of anything then, do they?
Yeah, they do.
They don't to me. The reason I eat peanuts is because there is a chemical reaction between alcohol and salt. That, I think I've told you this before. That's why.
Yeah, it makes you thirsty so that you drink more.
No, it's not that. Honestly, it's nothing to do with the thirst. There's some chemical reaction between alcohol and salt which gives you a feeling of satisfaction. And it's nothing to do with thirsty. It's and that's why, obviously, pubs sell, you know, millions of packets of crisps and peanuts and, pork scratchings. I can't stand pork scratchings, by the way. Do you like pork scratchings?
What a revolting thing that is.
Yeah.
I mean, it always makes me think of somebody scraping their fingernails down the back of the poor pig, and that's what the scratchings are.
Well, that's not a bad description of it, because I'm sure I've told you this before, or I'm sure you will know. I once had a pork scratchings variety of my own called Porky's Pork Scratchings. You knew that, didn't you?
I remember that, yes.
Yes, and I had to go to a factory in Wigan and pose for pictures and all that, and then they showed me through the process of how to make pork scratchings. And it is pretty horrible, I have to say. I mean, they just take what's left over from the pig, you know, from, you know, the pork chops and the bacon and all that kind of stuff, and they grind it all up. But even when I've had occasionally had a packet of pork scratchings because there was nothing else to buy from behind the bar, I know this sounds revolting, but I'm sure you get pork scratchings this day. It's still got a bit of pig hair in it. You know what I mean?
Oh, God, no, thank you. No, that's gross.
I think you do. It's that sort of part of it. And also, they as far as I'm concerned, they damage your teeth, you know? Mind you, I can't wait for the pubs to open again, obviously. And if there were only pork scratchings behind the bar, I'd have six packets as long as they open the door.
No. You'd have to tie me to a tree and force feed me those.
Yeah, right. Well, I won't be doing that, I can assure you, Miss Jones. Now, I know we talked a bit about Guns N' Roses because their lead singer was that mad guy. Who was he?
Oh, God.
Alexis? Alex?
No. Guns N' Roses was...
It was Alexis.
No, it wasn't Alexis. You caught me on the hop here now.
Oh, well, don't worry, because I don't want to talk about it. I want to talk about the drummer, Stephen Adler, drummer and co-songwriter Guns N' Roses, because it's his birthday as well. Guns N' Roses came and went in about 2 years, didn't they?
No, they've been around for years. That was, I'm just going to tell you, is Axl Rose.
Axl, I told you.
How could I forget? I made a film about him recently.
Oh, really? Yes, yeah. Bit of a short memory there, Miss Jones, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, it was a few months ago, yeah.
Yeah. And
what's happened to Steve Adler then?
Well, it's his birthday, I've just told you. And, and for that reason, they're apparently re-releasing some Guns N' Roses stuff. But A, it's a bad time to re-release it. But B, they were never that popular, were they?
Huge. Absolutely huge. How could you say that?
Yeah.
You've obviously missed out. Yeah, they were massive.
Yeah, well,
they've still got an enormous following around the world.
Yeah, and yeah, but they're not still together, are they?
No, they did break up, but Slash went his own way, the guitarist.
Yeah.
His mother was Ola Hudson, who was a fashion designer, and she had a big affair with David Bowie.
Oh, really? Wow. Mm. Talk about wheels within wheels, circles within circles, eh? Now, Miss Jones, getting back to the weather for a minute, because this is something I'm very worried about. I do hope people are looking after the birds in their gardens, OK? Sightings of some of Britain's best-loved garden birds have fallen. This is the annual review by BBC Gardeners World magazine. Blackbirds, starlings, blue tits and chaffinches spotted less often. Now, that's in a normal course of events, but can I tell everybody, please, who's listening to this, at this very moment, the earth is now frozen and birds desperately need food and water. I want everybody to get out there, including yourself, please, Miss Jones, and start distributing a bit of feed for the birds. It doesn't have to be bread if you don't want it to be. It can be, you know, stuff that birds eat, and water in particular, because when it's frozen, they've got no water. I know you say, well, there's snow on the ground, but birds can't peck snow. It hurts their beaks.
Yeah, no, we do put fat balls out for the birds in this part of the world.
Yeah, what's a fat ball?
So you can make them very easily, but you can buy them as well.
Yeah.
So you just melt whatever fat you've got lying around,
yes,
and you put bit of nuts and seeds in, and then you put them in the fridge, you shape them into balls, put them in the fridge, and then put them out for the birds.
Oh, okay. And you're doing that at the moment, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm very pleased. Well done. It shows your kind-hearted soul. Oh, there's a funny noise there. What's that noise?
Yeah. I don't know. We've had funny noises right. All the way through this. Okay. I thought it was just you.
Excuse me, Miss Jones. You mind? You know, I don't know. Everything I seem to do this one seems to be wrong in your eyes. Now, some bad news, of course. I'm not sure whether you voted for Brexit or not. I don't want to know. That's political. But what about this? Gulp. Will Brexit put £1.50 on the cost of EU wine? Wine drinkers face paying an extra £1.50 on a bottle from Europe because of post-Brexit bureaucracy. Well, I mean, who cares if it's only £1.50, huh?
Exactly. I mean, look, if you're going to buy a decent bottle of wine, the £1.50 doesn't make much difference, does it?
No, exactly. I find that my drinks bill in lockdown actually decreases by 2/3. And in that way, you realise just how expensive drink is outside, and just what a quite sizable part of your income is taken up just by meeting people and going for, you know, one or two meals a week and drinking. I mean, you and I have actually sat in a bar in London and drunk gin and tonics at £12.50 a time. Did you know that?
I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. We did it very often. So, yes, now you can buy a whole bottle of gin for not much difference from £12.
Yeah, I agree. Agree.
Yeah, no, but I don't do a lot of drinking at home by myself. I really don't get into that.
I have a couple of drinks a day. I don't think I get drunk as such, but, you know, I'll have two or three bottles of beer because I like it and it makes me feel better. I have, some peanuts with it, actually. And it's when I'm mopping up what's left to read in the papers for the day. You know what I mean? It helps me concentrate and all that kind of stuff. I tell you, I also spoke to in a recent radio show, a guy called Spencer somebody, who was a reality star, but is also the brother of Pippa Middleton's husband. Does that make sense?
Pippa Middleton's husband's aunt's guinea pigs.
No, Pippa Middleton's husband's brother is a reality star called Spencer somebody. He also went to Eton. But the reason I was talking to him was he's raised £7 million to launch a new company which produces and distributes low-alcohol gin. Now, I'm all for anybody who wants to drink low-alcohol drinks, but it doesn't include me. One of the reasons this gin he's produced is it's got a strength of 1.2%, and the normal strength of gin is 40%. So it's basically alcohol-free gin, you know what I mean? What I don't get, Leslie Ann, is why would you have a large gin and tonic with alcohol-free gin and ice and tonic? Because it doesn't give you the sort of effect a gin and tonic should give you, does it?
Exactly that. There was one advertised on the television the other evening, right, which was the same sort of thing. This one was alcohol-free Gordon's, I think it was. Alcohol-free Gordon's gin. And I looked at my daughter and said, what's the point of that? Surely you have a drink to get a little bit tipsy, to feel, you know, a little bit different from the way you've been feeling all day.
No, you're absolutely right. The reason you like the look of a great large glass with a double gin and tonic in it and ice in it clinking around, because you know the minute that you've swallowed the first couple of gulps of that glass, you're going to feel different, don't you?
Exactly.
It's going to make your day better. Yeah. Yeah.
So the same thing applies to alcohol-free lager. Yes. Why would people drink that?
No idea. Absolutely no idea. There's an advert on telly at the moment where some bloke's sitting in his sports car swigging lager and a policeman comes along and says, you know, that's a very good idea. And, of course, he says, this is alcohol-free. I've no idea. If I was going to drink something that was alcohol-free, I'd drink it for the taste, not for the effect it had on me. And frankly,
well, maybe that's the answer. That is why they're doing it, for the taste. Yeah, but, it can be the only reason.
Yeah, but I think dandelion and burdock tastes better than alcohol-free beer, to be honest, and it has the same effect on you. So I would drink dandelion and burdock instead.
Yeah, maybe you can't get that in most pubs. I don't know. But
well, you can't get it in pubs, no. Although I think you can. I think I've seen dandelion and burdock flavoured, you know, I don't know, shots and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, what do I know about it? Right. OK, Miss Jones. Well, on that note about we both agree that alcohol-free booze is crap and we will never be drinking it ourselves. However, one of these days the sun will come over the hill and we will make that journey down Fleet Street and reacquaint ourselves with the hostelries of England.
We are going to have such a pub crawl. We're going to go into all those old pubs we used to frequent. And that is going to take at least 2 days.
It certainly will. Righto, Miss Jones, take care of yourself until we meet again. And to all our listeners, thank you for listening to Planet Porky.
Bye-bye.
She actually said in an interview, anybody who doesn't vote for Jeremy Thorpe tomorrow is a, and then used the C word. But
Jeremy Thorpe?
Not Jeremy Thorpe, but who was the leader of the Labour Party? Jeremy Corbyn.
Jeremy Thorpe died about 40. What century are we in today?
Exactly, yeah. Jeremy Thorpe died about 40 years.
Have we gone back in time? Have we had the time machine out this weekend?
We have had the time machine out. I was obviously thinking of Hugh Grant in that A Terribly English Affair. You know, that was Jeremy Thorpe, wasn't it?
Or maybe that was an English scandal.
Oh, an English scandal, that's right. Yeah, that's it. Well done. Okay, you've got on the ball this morning. I've lost the point of my story now. It's Caitlin Moran. Yeah, unlike me, thank you. Caitlin Moran, Caitlin Moran, actually said anybody who doesn't vote for Jeremy, what's his name again? Corbyn, yeah? I'm sorry, I'm having a good Monday. So I'm trying to tell you a story of my heroism, right? How I sort things out, protect my country's reputation on foreign lands in Germany, and you're just basically taking the piss, aren't you? Hey?
What do you expect? Look, you're not really kind of getting to the point, so let's have the point of the story, shall we?
The point is that me and Frank Berth got together and rescued a very difficult and potentially dangerous situation in a restaurant in Germany, defending the honour of my country. Are you a lady who nibbles nuts every day? That sounds very rude, doesn't it?
Come on.